Thank you, Joe, for that very kind presentation. I very much want to thank Stanton Evans and Bill Campbell for giving me the opportunity to be at this podium today in my very first Philadelphia Society meeting. This is a very special time for me. It's almost surrealistic to be in San Antonio at a Philadelphia Society meeting. Several images have come to mind. My family has roots here in San Antonio, genealogical roots here in San Antonio. And as my father kindly reminded me yesterday, only four blocks away from here, you will find a Salinas Street. My second son was recently born here. My parents had an apartment here for 15 years. I lived here for a couple of years. My grandmother was from Philadelphia, from an area outside of Philadelphia, so there are a lot of images that make this a very special time. Not the least that we're in the Perot room, and I get a chance to bash Ross Perot once again. So, oh, and now that of all these images and talking about Salinas Street and my roots here, let me assure you, as I always do in these contexts, that there are absolutely no family ties with the past administration, just to keep that absolutely clear when we talk about free trade and particularly the free trade agreement. Joseph was talking about a paradigm shift that I think is absolutely fundamental. If we had held this meeting, and if I had been asked to speak here, let us say some 15 years ago, 16 or 17 years ago, let us take 1982, back in 1982, the main fear wouldn't have been, or the main concern wouldn't have been how to expand free trade in the Americas. The main concern would have been how to prevent Brezhnev from overtaking Mexico as a communist satellite. Now, the invasion of the Martians is probably now a more realistic possibility than an invasion on the part of the communists in Mexico. But these were very real concerns back in 1982. A year where, incidentally, the banking industry in Mexico was expropriated. And since then, things have changed dramatically. In many cases, things have changed dramatically for the good, although, as Manuel Ayala pointed out yesterday, for the wrong reasons as well. And I think it is important to highlight some of the specifics of why it is for the wrong reasons. Be that as it may, the change from 1982 to 1997 has been dramatic. In the case of San Antonio, in particular, San Antonio is one of the capitals of North American free trade. And I think this is an interesting topic, a very important and interesting topic to address, the future of free trade in the Americas. And it is symbolic that it is being held in San Antonio, because in a sense, Texas and Mexico act as a cultural and commercial bridge between the rich North American nations, in particular the U.S. and Canada, and the still underdeveloped but booming emerging markets in Latin America. So one aspect about free trade that is absolutely essential to understand is the context, the structural context, wherein the movement for free trade emerges. In many reasons, trade liberalization has responded to, as Manuel Ayala put it yesterday, pragmatics, the pragmatic need to change. The fact that import substitution, that protectionism, that statism were absolutely overwhelming failures in places like Argentina, like Brazil, like Mexico, all throughout Central America, Peru, Colombia, Venezuela, still suffering many of the ingredients of a statist and protectionist economy and still very backward, as I'm sure our next speaker will be able to tell you. Nevertheless, in the mid-1980s, the realization that this model of state intervention and protectionism had failed in Latin America encouraged governments to undertake programs of structural adjustment. Again, because of pragmatics and not principles, but nevertheless, they were moving in the right direction. This means that countries like Argentina, like Brazil, and like Mexico, and many others, embarked on programs of adjustment characterized in particular by four dimensions: fiscal discipline and monetary policy, deregulation, privatization of state-owned industries, and the external manifestation of this internal process of reform, trade liberalization. So, for instance, in the case of my own country, almost overnight we went from being a highly protected economy to a highly open economy when Mexico joined GATT in 1986. But the very same experiences or the very same undertakings can be multiplied in other countries. Argentina, just 10 years ago, had an inflation rate of four digits. Back in 1990, annual inflation rate from March to March was 20,000%. When you get to 20,000%, the difference between 2,000 and 20,000%, as many of the economists in this room could tell us, is really insignificant. There's just a complete collapse of confidence in the medium of exchange. Brazil suffered similar problems. Yet today we have Argentina with an inflation rate lower than the one of the United States, Brazil with an 8% inflation rate, Mexico, despite the peso devaluation of 1994 and the anti-market backlash that ensued after that, has taken 2 years to recover and not a lost decade. And this is in large measure because of the initiatives undertaken beforehand to open the economy, to make it export-oriented, to deregulate internal business, the fact that there is no longer a tremendous fiscal pressure derived from having to subsidize all kinds of corporations everywhere, from the still state-owned oil industry to soccer clubs and cabarets and hotels and absolutely all types of concerns that you can imagine under the business sector. So the dismantling of the state, of what Octavio Paz called the philanthropic ogre, the dismantling of the state in Latin America has been occurring as this paradigm shift has taken place. And trade liberalization emerges from this structural adjustment process as a key feature, not merely to seal it or not merely to extend the structural adjustment process, but also to act as an institutional lock so that the adjustment process does not become reversible. This is a key feature, a key strategic feature of trade liberalization, and in particular of the North American Free Trade Agreement that I would like to highlight a little bit later on. Now, as far as trade liberalization in Latin America is concerned, the main focus of dispute has been, of course, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We are seeing this dispute again in the U.S. Congress in the context of approval or not of the Fast Track Initiative and the possibility of using the framework established by the North American Free Trade Agreement to extend it beyond North American borders, starting with Chile, but perhaps negotiating block trade agreements with Mercosur, perhaps with the Andean Pact, with the Central American nations, pretty much under the multilateral or semi-multilateral model of GATT, or the World Trade Organization, of using the NAFTA framework to extend it all throughout the hemisphere and using this as the platform for hemispheric integration. There are good things about this as well as bad things, and I think it is important to talk about both. But it is important to settle on the disputes. It is important to settle on the nature of the debates, because in many cases we are attacking trade liberalization or we are assessing trade liberalization on the wrong grounds, for the wrong reasons, as Manuel Ayala was pointing out yesterday. For instance, what is the most popular attack against free trade in the United States? Free trade with Mexico. Is it Mexican trade or Mexican slavery are some of the banners that are sometimes seen here in Texas and throughout the United States. Of course, Ross Perot was famous for having invented the line about free trade will occasion a massive sucking sound of jobs fleeing south of the border to Mexico. And indeed, some jobs have been lost. But this is part of the process of trade and of creative destruction. In fact, the number of jobs that have been lost is insignificant in comparison to the number of jobs that can be created through an internal process of deregulation or through an internal process of stimulating private sector participation in the U.S. alone. As some economists have pointed out, Paul Krugman is not particularly someone that is consistent with the spirit of the Philadelphia Society, but in the case of trade, I think he's exactly right on the mark. Trade is not an issue about jobs, and to debate trade on the basis of jobs, either job losses or job gains, is a mistake. Trade is about exchanging goods and services that countries don't have for goods and services that certain countries can provide. In other words, trade is about enhancing comparative advantage. macroeconomic policy or deregulation in this sense is far more important to the prospects of job creation than it is than trade is for the prospects of job creation. And this means that independently of the numbers and of the debates, this means that the idea that trade was going to occasion the U.S. trade with Mexico and the rest of Latin America was going to occasion a massive sucking sound, well, as Pedro Noyola, then undersecretary in the last administration of trade in Mexico, said once, sucking sounds tend to be for suckers. And I agree. So, in any case, another mistake that is sometimes made is to measure trade on the basis of who has a trade deficit and who has a trade surplus. And this is a mistake that is characteristic of Mexican authorities right now. Well, you see, free trade with the United States has worked because, look, we have a trade surplus with the U.S. Well, this is the same type of zero-sum mentality that propels people like Patrick Buchanan and like Ross Perot and other critics of trade to say, well, since we have a trade deficit with Mexico, it means that we're losing. Trade deficits and trade surpluses are merely statistical aggregates or statistical measures of trade relationships that are going on between individuals. It's not that one nation loses vis-a-vis another nation. In fact, what we have to do is not focus on who has a trade deficit and who has a trade surplus. We have to focus on the total volume of trade. And if you look at the total volume of trade between Mexico and the United States, in the past 10 years, this has increased tenfold. Mexico, with all its poverty, with all its corruption, with all its problems, Mexico is already the second largest trading partner of the United States. And I venture to claim that if trade liberalization continues its pace, it will probably become, within the next 5 to 10 years, the number one trading partner of the United States. More trade is done with Mexico today than with Japan, despite all the fears about having a massive trade deficit with Japan. After all, in the case of Mexico, a trade surplus means that we're selling more and getting less, and that you're selling less and getting more. And that, on an individualized context, means that those that are having deficits are winning. Trade is not so much about who exports what and how much are we exporting, how can we compete on the basis of exports, but of exporting in order to import what is not as made as well at home. In this case, we're exploiting comparative advantage. Another debate that reflects a mistake about the way that trade is looked at in the United States and Mexico is the environment and issues of cultural integrity. So if you look at the debates, therefore, you have a context wherein trade is conflated with other issues, with issues about jobs, or with issues about who has a trade deficit and who has a trade surplus, not looking at the total volume of trade, but a zero-sum mentality of trade as a zero-sum game, or trade mixed with very important issues of culture and the environment, but issues that are strictly peripheral to who gains what on the basis of exchanging a greater amount of goods and services. So in clearing the debates, it is essential that prospects for trade liberalization and proponents of trade liberalization in the Americas debate the issues on the right grounds. And let me give you the Latin American perspective, and basically on the basis of the experience with NAFTA, of why an extension of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or even an extension of trade liberalization on the basis of simply unilateral liberalization to outside countries, would be a good thing. There are five fundamental reasons why trade liberalization and the North American Free Trade Agreement have been highly welcome developments in the case of a country like Mexico. Developments that can be easily extended or easily applied if we negotiated a NAFTA-style agreement with Argentina, with Brazil, or with the Mercosur region and the like. These reasons are the following. First of all, the North American Free Trade Agreement represents an opportunity to institutionalize legal order in a booming trade relationship. What happens when a trade increases between two countries? Well, one of the things that occur is that disputes begin to become more pronounced. Disputes concerning tuna, for instance, or disputes concerning avocado. There was an 84-year ban on the import of avocado products from Mexico that was recently lifted, and this is in no small part due to the implementation of the North American Free Trade Agreement. In the case of avocado, and still in the case of certain citrus products, the neoprotectionist regulatory structures in U.S. trade prevented certain products from Latin America to enter the U.S. market on the basis of sanitary and phytosanitary excuses. In the case of avocado, it was, well, we have to examine the inside of Mexican avocado because being south of the border, well, I'm simplifying and offering a caricature. Being south of the border, well, it probably is infected with all kinds of worms and whatnot. And of course, once you dismantle an avocado, what do you get? You get guacamole, which is what you get all around here. So, but the point being that a phytosanitary excuse was being used as a smokescreen for neoprotectionism. Who was benefiting from these highly moral and highly ethical statutes? Avocado growers in California. The same can be said of citrus products in Florida. The case of mango, for instance. Mango has to be dipped. In order for mango to enter Mexico from Central and South American nations, it has to be dipped into a tub of lukewarm water for an hour and a half. Now, would you be willing to eat a mango after being dipped into just again, because of the phytosanitary concern that perhaps these are infected? And cases like these can be multiplied indefinitely. So there are disputes, and disputes have to be resolved in a neutral fashion. So one of the fundamental features of the North American Free Trade Agreement is a dispute resolution mechanism, a neutral dispute resolution mechanism that enables, in this case, Canadian and Mexican counterparts to appeal to panels that are formed by people from all sides of the border, from both sides of the border, to neutrally and objectively decide trade disputes. Now, this does not guarantee a foolproof formula of who is right and who is wrong, but nevertheless, it's a very big step in the right direction in trying to level the playing field, so to speak. There are many issues that I'd like to talk about in the case of order, but due to time constraints, perhaps during the question and answer period, due to time constraints, I'll pass on to the next subjects. Nevertheless, please keep this in mind, the idea of dispute resolution mechanisms that are regional and not applied on a national basis constitutes a very welcome development. Okay. The second reason why extending trade liberalization throughout the Americas is good for the Latin American region centers on the issue of diversification. You have certain countries in Latin America, in the case of Mexico, for instance, that were highly dependent on the sale of one product. In the case of Mexico, it was oil. Through trade liberalization, a natural process occurs whereby the increase of market opportunities generates a process of diversification. So if you ask me back in 1982, if we had hypothetically held the Philadelphia Society in San Antonio in 1982, besides concerns about Mexico being a communist satellite, that would have told you, and you would have asked me, what are Mexico's main exports? I probably would have said, well, populist rhetoric, drugs, and illegal immigrants. And now I can claim that it's aluminium, and I can claim that it's televisions and refrigerators. Tijuana is the television capital of the world. Auto parts, automobiles, and many, many other products. Oil today represents only 25% of total sales abroad, whereas back in 1982, it represented 80% of total sales abroad. I think that process of diversification is a highly welcome development for Latin American economies that have become highly vulnerable to depend on the sale of just one or two products. This leads to the third reason of why trade liberalization is good for Latin American markets, and this is the issue of competitiveness. Competitiveness measured not in terms of who has a trade surplus and who has a trade deficit, but rather of developing economies of scale and developing economies of specialization. The fact that now over 7,300 products have duty and quota-free entry into the United States on the part of Mexico means that more trade can occur with the United States. So that the numbers today in terms of exports are reaching over the 100 billion threshold. In other words, Mexico will export this year approximately $110 billion worth of goods. And this in large part because of the benefits that ensue from economies of scale and economies of specialization. This leads me to the fourth and fifth final features of the benefits of trade liberalization that I think are probably the most important for the case of Latin American countries. Trade liberalization has an extra commercial aspect that is very relevant to the process of structural adjustment. The NAFTA Treaty, by institutionalizing trilateral rules of the game, makes it far more difficult for countries with statist and protectionist traditions, such as Mexico, such as Argentina, Brazil, Peru, Colombia, Venezuela. It makes it far more relevant, far more likely that they will not return to those bad policies, despite the political temptations to do so. You can see this in the case of Mexico after the peso crisis. The temptation was enormous to abuse fiscal policy and monetary policy in the interest of preserving the body politic. Nevertheless, instead of going back to the bad old policies that occasioned the lost decade of the 1980s, the administration, the Zedillo administration in Mexico, decided to continue the process of market adjustment, perhaps in a very wishy-washy manner, but nevertheless, there is a commitment. A commitment that responds to pragmatics, but a pragmatics that ensues from the fact that we do have this institutional lock. Give me 30 seconds more to outline the three dangers that I see with the future of hemispheric liberalization. Again, if you see the North American Free Trade Agreement as a strategic lock on the irreversibility of market reform, it means that the prospects for investment on the part of rich North American countries in emerging markets throughout Latin America becomes a highly welcome development in that area. Nevertheless, there are three dangers. One of them I already mentioned is abusing trade or using trade as a smokescreen to protect certain vested interests. This can occur as the prospects for Latin American liberalization or hemispheric liberalization continue. Also, a related danger is the danger of balkanization. If we don't use the NAFTA framework, or if we don't use unilateral liberalization or multilateral liberalization, you're bound to see the development of little trade pacts between different nations, Mercosur and the Andean Pact, or the NAFTA agreement, and Mexico negotiating with Chile on a separate basis, or Mexico negotiating with Colombia and Venezuela. And this process of balkanization can lead to a regional type of protectionism that will later be far more difficult to dismantle. One final danger that I see is that the obsession in trade liberalization with maintaining trade surpluses has led to the perverse idea in Mexico and in Latin America that we should cheapen our currencies to stimulate exports. I think this is a terrible idea. As Robert Bartley of the Wall Street Journal says, the worst idea in the 20th century after communism, but it's an idea that we have to combat. Be that as it may, I think it's all clear to us in the case of trade liberalization in the hemisphere. When trade is free and voluntary, everyone necessarily benefits. Thank you very much.